Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Sarah Calvert, and she's the one of the resident attorneys of the Small Business Advocate Show. Let me tell you a little bit about her. She is a small business attorney in the true sense of the word, folks, because if you've been listening to her on the show for the last few weeks, you know that she puts her money where her mouth is. She really does know small business. She's the principal in Calvert & Associates PC, a law firm which she started in 1991. She attended Mary Washington College in Fredericksburg, Virginia for her undergraduate degree in economics and international business, and she received her Juris Doctor degree from the George Mason University Law School. She has devoted her practice to providing small business clients with the best legal services and business resources so they can get on with doing what they do best. And she really does that, folks. And as I mentioned before, she's also a member of the Central Fairfax Chamber of Commerce, which I'm proud of her for that as well. Sarah, welcome back to the show.
Good morning. I keep thinking I should charge more every time you read that.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the things that I've talked about on the show before is if you ever feel that you're a little bit down on yourself, if you ever feel that, you know, what have I got to offer or whatever, or especially if you've just gotten downsized, if you're having some difficulty with your job or whatever, I tell people to get your resume out and write a new resume, update your resume.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you've ever done that, what you realize is that you know a lot of things, mm-hmm. and it's been a while since you actually thought about all the things that you know how to do, and it'll actually give you a little bit of a lift.
Oh, it's a wonderful thing. When I teach a class about how to start a small business at our local community college, I sit down, and there's a lot of retirees and people who are maybe housewives who've never worked who want to start small businesses, and I always have them write down what they bring to the table.
Right.
And I had two ladies approach me once, two older ladies who've been housewives all their lives, and they said, "We don't have any skills." And I looked at them, I said, "How many children between the two of you have you raised?" And they went, "Seven." I said, "So let's see, you're a chauffeur, you're medically trained.
Organized.
You're organized,
yeah.
You're efficient." And we went through this whole list.
Long-suffering.
And by the time they got done, they were like, "Wow, we really have things to bring to the table,
yeah.
don't we?"
Yeah. So. Well, it really makes a difference, but it's interesting that you say that about your bio. Sarah, we've been talking about 101 ways mm-hmm. to avoid liability in your business. Mm-hmm. That's the subject we've been covering for the last few weeks, and we've made some progress. We still have a long way to go to finish up the topic, but I know that we've talked. I'm pretty sure we finished up the accounting and we've moved into the employee issue. Did you have anything else that you want to talk about in the employees?
In the accounting or the employees?
In the area of employees.
The employees. Well, I like people to understand when you use employee handbooks and when you use contracts.
All right.
Many small businesses are just one person, and that's terrific. That's easiest to control. And then sometimes you hire one assistant or maybe two. By the time you get to three people, you're triggering a lot of usually some workman's compensation laws, mm-hmm. things like that. And it's at that point that I like people to take a look at putting together an employee handbook.
All right.
There's a lot of commercial ones out there, and most of them are fine, so long as you do one thing, and that's run it by an attorney in your state. Because employment law is so vastly different from state to state that you've got to be extremely careful with a lot of the prepackaged software out there. It's not that it's bad, it's just that it doesn't necessarily apply or contain the things that your state needs to have in there.
Well, fundamental business practices and some, I guess maybe some national statutes are fine in those packages, as you say, mm-hmm. but it does have to be modified for the individual state, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it needs to be modified for your particular industry. When I'm doing an employee handbook for one of my mechanical businesses, maybe a auto repair or auto body shop, it's very important that we put in there things like you will wear your safety equipment and that you could be fired for not doing so, so that you are protected from workman's compensation claims and protected from OSHA violations. There's a lot of things that go into that that doesn't necessarily apply to someone who's in more of an office setting.
Mm-hmm.
So you need somebody who understands your particular type of business and the type of employee problems that might occur in your business.
I am old enough, I've been around long enough to remember when no one had employee manuals, and it was almost... The attitude is almost that, you know, if I don't have one, if I don't put anything in writing, they can't hold me to anything. Well, those days are gone.
Unfortunately, there's too many agencies looking over our shoulder,
right,
wanting to know, well, if this is a problem, you know, if you fired this person, where's your employee policy that says you can do this?
Right.
And so I tell people that the rule of thumb is, if you're not absolutely willing to follow it to the letter, then don't put it in writing. But there are lots of things that should be put in the writing because you have to follow them to the letter. You don't get a choice. It's either a statute or it's a procedural rule of one of your unemployment agencies or your workman's compensation group.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, as I said, it swings both ways, and this is one that, you can certainly do brain surgery on yourself. This is one I think you ought to at least run by an attorney, even if you've tried to create it yourself.
I agree with you. 888-822-8255. That's the phone number. And, Sarah, one of the things that's a little bit, it's kind of scary and that really emphasizes the importance of having a policy, employee policy manual and really some other guidelines, and that is in the area of sexual harassment. As you know, the Supreme Court has passed what really is some landmark decision in the last few months, 4 or 5 months, where they said that management can be held responsible for, can be sued for sexual harassment that one of your managers did.
Right. Well, this
and
is
even though the company didn't, the owner of the company didn't do anything wrong, if one of your managers is found to have sexually harassed someone, and if the only way to protect yourself in that case is if you have a policy that demonstrates that you trained this person not to do that,
not even just a policy, but records that this person, that your staff has been trained in sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. I'm putting these in the corporate minutes these days. They're that important. That this year that the corporation paid for everyone to attend sexual harassment training and sensitivity training, just to make sure that things are documented. The other thing is that you've got to have some sort of internal procedure. If someone comes to you and says there's a supervisor that's trouble, you've got to do something.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, stand by, Sarah. We've got to take a break. Folks, it's 20 after. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. We're visiting with one of our resident attorneys of the Small Business Advocate Show, and the only one who focuses on and emphasizes small business clients and helping small business clients. And her name is Sarah Calvert. And Sarah, I would like for you to tell our audience how they can contact you.
Sure. They can call me on the phone at 800-526-5665, or they can reach me at my website at www.calvert.com, or they can email me at slkcalv@aol.com.
Now, you're in Virginia, Northern Virginia.
In Virginia.
And what is the Virginia number?
The Virginia number is 703-591-5315.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Sarah, we were talking about employees and working with employees, and we were just finishing up employee handbooks. And one of the things you want to talk about was contracts, having a contract with an employee.
Yes. There's a lot of situations where I get these terrible phone calls, and someone calls and says, Sarah, my best employee just walked out with my biggest client. What can I do? And unfortunately, 99 times out of 100, the answer is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
The state courts and the federal courts have upheld everybody's right to compete, and they're not going to interfere in our entire national system of allowing capitalism and competition.
Unless you've agreed previously by contract.
Unless, and that's a big unless, because not many firms do this, that you put some sort of contract into place. There's a lot of different contracts that work differently in different states. In the state that I live in, a good non-compete is enforceable in many cases. Usually the cases that you see it enforced in most courts, where you bring in an apprentice and you train them with everything that they know nothing before they come in,
mm-hmm,
and you train them up, and then they walk away with the business and you have a contract in place, usually that's going to be enforceable. It's not impossible if it's a well-drawn agreement to make that a valid way of doing it. And I know you said you've done that before, Jim,
mm-hmm,
that you've had contracts that were enforced in court.
Yes, I have.
And there's a big fallacy out there that these are completely unenforceable, and that's not true at all. If they're done well, if they're done under the right circumstances.
If they're not too broad brush.
Not too broad brush. And if you don't have somebody who's already a professional bringing their own knowledge into,
mm-hmm,
a business, that's where we tend to see the court saying, look, you know, this person is fully was qualified before they came to you to do this.
If you have someone who comes to work with you with 20 years of experience in this industry, mm-hmm, and they work for you for a year and they leave, then you probably won't be able to prevent them from continuing to do business in their industry unless,
mm-hmm,
correct me if I'm wrong, unless they have signed an agreement that says if when I leave you for whatever reason, I agree not to compete with you for 6 months or 12 months.
Well, again, it depends on how it's drawn. Those are the ones that some of the states that are not as protective are more likely to fall down on. But a good business state will allow you to keep those protections. What we usually try and do in those situations in states that are weaker is to write agreements that say, if you leave, and if you compete against me, and if you take a client of mine, then you owe me last year's gross receipts on that client.
Right.
And then use it as a collection, and that is much more enforceable.
Don't we need to differentiate between a non-compete agreement
and an employee contract? Right. There's three levels to agreements like this. The first and lowest level that you might want to have all your employees on is a confidentiality agreement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you put together the knowledge and the technical aspects, the patents, the trademarks, the business information, the client lists. This information should be kept confidential to your business and shouldn't be out on the streets because employees leave. So first thing you want to do is...
Or
even while they're working for you. You're assuming hopefully there's some sort of loyalty to their own paycheck, but after they're gone...
It's a good idea, though, to confront them with this, with the fact that you expect them to keep their mouth shut.
Oh, absolutely.
Because a lot of them, that just kind of goes over their head if you don't tell them.
Oh, yeah, here's our client, and we did such and such for them, and that may sound like marketing, but that could also be revealing secrets to a competitor
that's your
employee's not quite wise enough to see.
Mm-hmm.
So confidentiality is the first level of employee contract. The second level is what we call a non-solicit, and it sounds like we're talking about prostitution or something. We're not. What we're talking about is don't go after my clients. If you leave, you can't come after the client base that I've already established.
Right.
That's a very easy to enforce contract. It doesn't stop the other person from opening their own business. It doesn't stop them from competing. It doesn't stop them from working in their industry. It simply says, hands off my clients.
My customer list, mm-hmm. and I've included any prospects that
right.
we have proposals out to.
Right. Yeah, anything you have, and it depends on how you market your business, because a lot of people will do mass direct mail marketing, and it's hard to say who's a prospect and who's
right.
not.
And what's reasonable is the term that would have to apply here, wouldn't it?
Yes. Yeah. You've got to be able to define
it. Stand by, Sarah. We've got to take a break. Folks, it's 29 after. We're going to be right back with Sarah Calvert. We're talking about the legal part of your small business. Sarah Calvert is our special guest. She is a small business attorney. She focuses her practice on small business in Northern Virginia and does a great job. But she's continuing a series with us about how to avoid liability in your small business. And we've been talking about some employee issues. But before we get into that, I want to let you know something about Sarah. I've been talking to you about the fact that she's a member of the Chamber of Commerce, the Central Fairfax Chamber of Commerce, and that she's very active in that, and how proud I was of her for being a member of the chamber. When in this day and time, when chambers are taking positions that a lot of attorneys don't like, for example, against or in favor, I should say, of tort reform, Sarah is a very active member of her chamber, and I commend her for that. And she is being recognized, I think it's tomorrow, isn't it, Sarah?
Yes, uh-huh.
You're being recognized as... Tell us the exact award that you're going to get.
It's called Small Business Advocate of the Year.
Wait a minute. You
sorry,
can't have that award.
Sorry.
No,
they didn't know you.
I understand. No, I'm very proud of you. Congratulations, Sarah. That's a big deal, and I'm sure it's well deserved.
Oh, thank you.
And you got all the folks coming in, and
I guess at my age you don't get too many awards, so it's kind of a bring mom and dad in town kind of thing.
Well, you've obviously proven yourself to those folks, and that's a great award. And I'll tell you what, I would have to say, it's probably kind of unique for an attorney to get that award.
Well, I imagine it is. The last couple people that have won it have not been attorneys. So
I'm sure they haven't. I bet you'll be in a small group around the country probably.
Yeah.
Let's go back to talk about employee relationships. You talked about the first and second levels
mm-hmm.
of employee agreements, and you were about to talk about the third one.
Sure. First was the confidentiality. Second was don't solicit my clients, don't go after my clients.
Right.
The highest level is called a non-compete, what people traditionally call a non-compete agreement. And that means you can't set up a business that's in direct competition with me. Maybe you can't bid on contracts that I am also bidding on. You can't set up a competing business. You can't own it. You can't be an employee of a competing business. There's a lot of different ways to stop that competition.
Right.
You have to be very particular and name all of the ways that you don't want them to be able to do it. Can their spouse else go in business and they go work for it.
Right.
That's a common trick that you want to protect against.
And call you can't, they can't be an employee, principal, owner stockholder,
consultant. That's
right.
Another one.
All those on the board of directors. You have to stick all those different opportunities in there, don't you?
That's right. You have to be very creative, and I always tell people that they pay me to be paranoid, so we think of all the paranoid ways that they can get around and non-compete and try and stop them from doing that.
Now, one of the things, you call these contracts, and when I think of a contract, I think of something that I give and something that you give, and a contract has to be bilateral,
right.
Typically, whereas when I think of these things, I think of this being more unilateral because I am giving you the job. Maybe you could consider that to be my part of the deal, but you want your employees to sign this, and you're not necessarily paying them anything for signing either one of these agreements.
Well, Jim, you can write the best agreement in the whole wide world, and let me tell you, I've been working on it over these years, but if you do not give it to the employee in the correct manner, the agreement is useless. Because the courts say any agreement, I mean, this is a legal principle of all, whether you call it a contract, an agreement, or whether you call it the back of an envelope,
mm-hmm.
It must have consideration. And that means that both parties must give and receive something in exchange for their promises that are in the agreement. So when an employee is just beginning, it's very easy because you take the job, and along with the job comes the non-compete agreement.
Part of the terms of
part
this
of the
employment.
Terms, exactly. And so in return, they're getting all of their benefits and all of their salary. The problem comes when you've been around for 2 years and you've got some employees, and they've already been employed by you, and there is no exchange. You just tell them they sign it or they go away, they have to be fired.
Mm-hmm.
The courts have held in most states that is not adequate consideration. That's not enough of exchange, that they'll be fired if they don't sign it because it's a negative.
I promise you that 100%, mm-hmm. maybe 99.9% of all business owners who have not consulted an attorney don't know that.
Well, that's very true. It's a very common misconception that you can write one of these contracts off a nice piece of software, and please believe me, I'm not an anti-software person, but, I mean, each state is so particularly different, but this is one that is pretty much in most of the states, and that is you must give some sort of consideration. Now, it can be a bonus, but it can't be a dollar. It's got to be something that would appear on the face of it to match what they're giving up. A promotion is usually a good time to do it, a new title.
So some kind of consideration, a promotion,
exactly.
or maybe an increase in their bonus percentage or commission.
Or some sort of commission schedule.
Some new terms of the employment.
Even stock options, a new 401k plan, those are all good times. I've had a lot of clients do this at Christmas time when they give out Christmas bonuses, if they're going to do a substantial bonus at Christmas.
Yep.
That in order to do this, they do that. Or they bring them on when they reach a certain level, so as they're promoted, they have them sign these agreements.
Very interesting. Well, I'll tell you what, I know one thing. I've learned something this hour, and I know a lot of other folks have too. Sarah, stand by. We've got to take a break. Folks, it's 39 after. Still have time for a call. 888-822-8255. And our special guest is our good friend Sarah Calvert, resident small business attorney of the Small Business Advocate Show. 888-822-8255. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. And I'd like, Sarah, for you to give your website and email and phone number again, please.
Sure. It's www.calvertandassociates.com, all spelled out together.
Yep.
And email is slkcalv@aol.com. 800 number is 800-526-5665. Call me if you need something. Just
okay.
Tell me you heard me on Jim's show.
The first little visit, just to find out if there's something you can help them with. That
we don't charge. No, we have no charge for first consultation.
Okay, good. Sarah, let's wrap up the employee part. And
okay.
One of the things I noticed here on your list is do you restrict signing payroll checks to officers of the corporation only? And I'm not talking. You list payroll checks here, mm-hmm. but actually. I'd like to talk about all checks.
Sure. And
who is capable of, who is able to sign checks, and how do you control that person to make sure that person doesn't steal from you?
Well, the reason that this particular one is in here talking about payroll is because if for some reason the company or corporation does not pay its trust fund portions of its payroll,
right.
meaning the money we're holding for federal and for state, then the person who signed the checks is one of the people that the IRS looks for to be ultimately responsible. And in a lot of companies, that's some poor secretary down the hall who had nothing to do with whether the taxes got paid or not.
You know, I know a horror story that I read about. You may know this story, but there was a lady working for a fairly large company. wasn't a big public company, but was a pretty good sized private company. And she found that the owner, she was one of the management members. She was, I guess, in charge of accounting, and she was the corporate secretary, but she owned no part of the company. And she turned her bosses in. She quit and turned them in to the IRS because they were defrauding the government of these and the employees of the payroll taxes. She turned them in. Guess what the IRS did?
They came after her for the
after
money.
They found out that the other guy's bankrupt and basically fled, they came after her and they were making her pay it.
Yeah, that's not uncommon. That's the reason I say it's only fair to your employees to have somebody who's fairly responsible in the company, like an officer or director, go ahead and be the person that signs the payroll checks.
Right. What about the other issue that I mentioned where you've got somebody responsible for your accounting and for paying the checks and writing the checks, you know, and it seems to me in my part of the world that there have been quite a few cases, almost a rash in the last year or two, of employees that have been stealing from their organizations.
Well, it's unfortunately very easy to do if you have no outside controls. So this is a situation where I would say if you've got an internal employee that's handling payroll and things like that you should have an outside CPA that they don't need to audit, but they can at least review the work that's done, at least on a monthly basis.
Waiting
for an annual review, unfortunately, doesn't catch things very well.
What about bonding?
Bonding is something that a lot of people who are, for example, in the air conditioning and heating business, when they go on people's phones, this is the type of insurance that you can buy to basically protect yourself from, the guy knocked over my Ming vase or my golden bracelet is stolen.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking to protect your employees from something having to do with employee theft or employee damage. And it's what a lot of people look for when they're hiring a company. So it kind of goes both ways. It's kind of a marketing tool. That's also an extra added level of insurance. In order to get it, the person basically has to have no criminal background, and they have to have a good driving record and things like that, so that they are somebody who is worthy of having this extra insurance put on them.
Is it expensive?
It can be, but a good insurance agent should be able to shop for you. Get a good small business professional agent that's got a good brokerage behind them. They can go to a lot of sources, and most businesses are going to find that if they're in people's homes or working in and around people's homes, this is going to be something that's going to be good for marketing as well. So
this is a different issue, folks, from liability insurance.
Yes, this is totally different. This is specifically on the employees. And it could be you as well if you're in the homes as well. But it's specifically to stop that one type of employee theft or employee damage claim.
Would the same bonding relationship cover the lady or the man who's in charge of your finances and who bonding them for any kind of impropriety?
Yes, absolutely. That can be done as well.
And
there's also types of insurance that most liability insurance carries an employee dishonesty policy within it. You know, there's usually like 5 or 10 different types of policy, coverage within your general liability policy. Most of them have an employee theft policy.
I've got a pretty comprehensive plan. I don't remember seeing the employee dishonesty or employee theft portion. I'll have to check that out.
I was going to say, check it out in your insurance. I know my policy does, and I didn't specifically ask for it, but it's a nice thing to have.
One of those little features that they add to it. Well, mine has a number of features, but I don't remember that part. It's been a while since I read that policy. I'll have to check that out. Let's talk about drug testing. That's a sticky wicket, isn't it?
It's a very sticky wicket, and I have some. Here's my personal feelings on it. If your business is not involved driving on the roads, or personal professionalism, if you're not somebody's accountant, if you're not doing something that's secretive for somebody,
right?
Then you're probably not going to get away with something like random drug testing. Some of the few that have gotten away with it, anybody who's obviously trucking, trains, public transportation,
right,
for sure you're going to get away with them there. Otherwise, the rest of us are going to be stuck with employment testing, and that's about it.
Yeah. Stand by, Sarah. We've got to take a break. Folks, it's 50 after. When we come back, I've got a few more things I want to talk to Sarah about employee relationships with employers. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. All right, we're back. It's 54 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. And our special guest is our good friend Sarah Calvert. She's one of the resident attorneys of the Small Business Advocate Show, and she focuses her practice on small business issues, and we appreciate her spending some time with us. She's been with us to do a series now for several weeks, and we're going to continue to do this on small business legal matters, especially the, she has a program that she's developed, and she delivers this to audiences around her area called 101 Ways to Avoid Liability in Your Business. Sarah, you've got a number of other topics that you talk about, don't you?
Absolutely. We talk about hiring and firing employees. We talk about collections. That's always a big issue for small businesses. And we talk about women-owned businesses, how to start a small business, how to grow a small business.
So if anybody wants to contact you and to for their organization, mm-hmm. for you to do, to talk about any of these. And these, I'm sure you could do this in 30 minutes or an hour. Or
you tell me the time period. I'll tell you how much we can get done.
I got you. Okay, and give us the number again.
Sure, it's 800-526-5665. You can chat with Sharon in my office. She's got all the topics and can send you the information.
And give us the 703 number, too.
Sure, 703-591-5315, and that's in Northern Virginia.
And the website is calvertandassociates.com, all spelled out. Okay, let's talk about, as we wrap up the hour, let's talk about the drug testing issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I think is important. You can get yourself into a little bit of a bind if you're if you don't handle the drug testing issue properly.
It's really very difficult. You can't not hire someone because of a disability, and unfortunately, a recovering alcoholic or recovering drug addict, which is usually what we're looking for in drug tests, is somebody who is protected under the ADA.
Yep.
Somebody who's actively drinking or who is actively using drugs is not. So some of the information you get, you may or may not be able to do much with. Most people who are in any kind of DOD, Department of Defense contracting, or operating heavy machinery, or working in areas that require driving, can get away with some random drug testing. But the ACLU has said that the rest of us are private, that we don't have a public interest in us being off of drugs.
Okay, now, if I know a person that I want to hire, mm-hmm. is a former a drug user,
mm-hmm.
and they've told me that, or whatever, for whatever reason, however I might know that, mm-hmm. can I have them take a drug test as a condition of going to work?
You're going to have a very difficult time because you're not requiring it of other people. Therefore, you're setting that person up as a different person,
mm-hmm.
and so you'd have some grave difficulties there. The best thing you can do, though, if you're worried about drug issues, is to take a look at the behavior of the person. If the person's behavior is not appropriate for that job,
right.
then that person should be fired, regardless of whether it comes from drug, alcohol, or just their
okay.
behavior's bad.
So right.
Don't be afraid of somebody just because you think they're doing drugs. Oh, I can't fire them, you know, either ADA or I can't drug test them. If the person is showing up chronically late, if the person is not performing well, if the person has repeatedly injured themselves on machinery, had car accidents, those are grounds for firing.
All right. Can I have it as a condition of my employee's employment for all employees, regardless of who you are? Can I say everyone has to take a drug test?
You can, but again, the ACLU has been very hot on these businesses and professions that don't require public trust and safety. So, yeah, if you have machinery, yes. If you're driving vehicles or trucks, yes. If you're in an office setting and you're not subject to, you know, extremely mm-hmm. confidential material, you're going to have a hard time getting that through.
Yeah, I see. Sarah, that's going to have to be the last word. As always, you've done well today. Thank you very much for that, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. Bye-bye. And congratulations again on your award. Bye-bye. Sarah Calvert, ladies and gentlemen. Got to wrap it up for this hour. Before I go, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.